gonna tell you, I'm gonna treat this like a group meeting because, anyway, that seems better. Right, I'm gonna tell you about some project I'm doing that's joined in progress. Tell me if I need to write bigger. With David Reuter. And I don't think we have a complete name for the project yet. I think the project is sort of, I think we're sort of overall calling it sort of deeper Galois theory. I think that's what we've been started to call the project. We were calling it higher Galois theory and decided this was better branding. So the theorem I want to tell you about today is some piece of this, which is a piece that goes under the name of Kummer theory. Well, I'll tell you all about it, but in particular, especially sort of, yeah. My goal for today will be to tell you what the deeper Kummer theory says, sort of something about Kummer theory. Since I assume that you've all, no, I don't assume, you probably are not sort of all well-versed in early 20th century algebraic number theory. And so that's somehow not, I will, basically my goal will be to tell you what Kummer theory is. It's a nice piece of early 20th century algebraic number theory, and I'll try to tell it to you in a way that we stumbled across it. And I sort of force myself to have some organization. So my goal specifically will be to tell you I wrote up the statement of the theorem that I want to tell you. And of course, most of the talk will be to tell you what the words in the theorem means. So the statement of our theorem, everything in progress, is the following. If I have a tower, maybe T for tower, and if my tower contains the rational numbers, it's a characteristic zero tower. I haven't told you what a tower is, but if I have one of these things, then we have a complete characterization of when the tower is kind of Galois closed, when it has trivial Galois group. And the characterization is that you can detect if a tower is Galois closed by, first of all, computing the roots of unity. Let me already anticipate, towers are some version of commutative rings or fields. And I'm doing Galois theory, I'm doing something about field extensions in the kind of, not fields in the sense of physics, fields in the sense of algebra. And so mu is the standard notation for the roots of unity in a field. So my first condition is that the roots of unity should be precisely something called IQ mod Z. I have to tell you what that means, what that is. I have to tell you what the roots of unity in a tower are. And then the other conditions necessary for being Galois closed is that for every finite group, you just did some condition about finite groups. For every finite group, if you look at the fiber functors with value, the one-dimensional part of your tower, there should be only one fiber functor up to isomorphism. Okay, so that's our theorem. Anyway, that's my goal, is to tell you what these words mean. Let's see, where should I start? So let me start by talking about towers in general. So towers are something that actually I think you have all met. I think we're sort of trying to advocate a na this name. The name is due to Claudia Scheinbauer, I should say. So a tower is just a target for functorial field theory. That's what towers are. Targets for functorial field theory, for TQFTs, for extended functorial field theory. I'm not going to try to figure out the non-topological version of this one. So I probably don't have to remind you what a TQFT is, but let me remind you anyway, very briefly, the way that I want you to think about this. Well, what a TQFT is, if you have an n plus 1b TQFT, of course, I don't know what to call it. Let's call it Z. then what are the types of things you could do? Well, you could look at Z on a closed top manifold. So if you have a closed manifold, then the value of the closed manifold is the value of the path integral on the manifold will be some number. Whatever type of numbers you're working over. I'm an algebraist, so I'll be open-minded about what family, what collection of numbers to use. Okay. And so you might say a minus once extended CQFT is a number-valued invariant of manifolds. There's a good definition. Okay, well, that's not all of a CQFT. If you have an N manifold, which is closed, then the value on an N manifold should be some sort of collection of states on the manifold. So there should be some category. So that, let's say the category collection of numbers, maybe I call, let's call this, I don't know, R, like whatever R, it's cat, like I don't know, A0. So A0 is maybe a ring, sort of a set. And you know, maybe you have some axiom that like Z of the empty set is probably the number one. So it's not just a set, it's a set with a number one in it. Fine. And if all you knew about was closed manifolds, this is probably all you could say. Well, you could say a little bit more, because Z of an N manifold, that should be maybe a vector space. Maybe I don't really know what a vector space is, or at least I'm going to be open-minded about what a vector space is, but it'll be some element in some category. And there should be a compatibility condition that says that bordisms between M manifolds go to morphisms in the category. And in particular, any closed manifold is a bordism from empty set to itself. See, the empty set is a manifold of dimension n for every n. And so if you want the composition of bordisms to be the composition of morphisms, then the existence of this delooping in one dimension tells you that this function is multiplicative. So I didn't have to put that into the axioms. I didn't have to say as minus one's extended CQFT is a multiplicative invariance of n manifold, of top manifolds. I had to say it's an invariant, and then I have to say it has a delooping. So this forces Z of n manifolds to be multiplicative. And then you can keep going. So you could say that So you might reasonably say that a k-extended CQFT is a functor sort of pointed categories from, you could take the bordisms in dimensions n minus k through k, n plus 1. And you could pick some target category, so where AK is a K category. And maybe I want some axiom to make this compatible, that maybe the empty set goes to some pointing object. And then a fully extended CQFT would just be something that sends K off to infinity. So a fully extended CQFT is infinitely extended. And this is a good definition because, see, the empty set is a manifold of every dimension. In particular, the empty set is a minus 22 dimensional manifold, if you want it to be. And so if you cut something into dimension minus 22, you get sort of full symmetric mind. So this the punchline, the point of what I'm trying to tell you is I'm trying to say that this sort of sequence of infinite deloopings builds in symmetric monadality. It built in, if you can deloop once, you get some multiplicativity. If you can deloop a second time, that gives you enough space to move manifolds around and so on.
So if k is negative but not infinity, or sorry, k is big enough and n minus k is negative.
Right, so if I really meant just like a weak k category and not an infinity k category, then yes, you get a stabilization that as soon as you can deloop down to negative n dimensions, you get symmetric monadality, or roughly negative n dimensions, you get symmetric monadality. And then further deloopings are no data at all. Well, this was supposed to be motivation.
Then between the AKs.
Ah, right. So the relation should be that if you... Yeah, so let me actually give the definition. So a tower... this was sort of supposed to be motivation for a kind of audience of people who pretend to do quantum field theory. But the definition is the following. So a tower... is a sequence A0, A1, and so on, where so that AK is a pointed K category, an E0 K category. So meaning that it has a base point, it has some element called 1. Together with the data of equivalences, data with an equivalence that between if you take that each category should deloop the previous one. So what that means is that if you take AK minus 1, that should be equivalent to the what I'll call the loops of AK. So this is, by definition, the endomorphisms in AK of the element 1. So this is the definition that Scheinbauer gives. And it's a actually rather familiar definition in hindsight, because a spectrum is the same thing except with spaces. A spectrum, in the sort of sense of algebraic topology, is the same, but sort of fully invertible. So it's just a property to be a space if you're an n category. So, but with not k categories, but with spaces. A space is just the same as a category in which all the morphisms are invertible. My categories might as, I mean, when I, of course, when I say category, I mean infinity category. Obviously, it's like, my gosh, it's like we're a quarter way into the century. So that's what Scheinbauer defines this as. And I'm going to add one more axiom that for what I want to do. So to do ring theory, see, this is like categories are kind of like working with monoids. I mean, categories have a composition law. And so if you compare it to sort of working with rings, it's like working with monoids instead of with rings. And if you really want to do interesting algebra, some of the most interesting algebra is like polynomials. It's about the interplay between addition and multiplication. And anyway, if you really wanted to do quantum theory is all about things like superposition. It's again about the interplay of addition and multiplication. You're not doing quantum theory if you just have categories. You need categories with a superposition notion. Otherwise, you're just doing theory and not quantum theory. You're doing like a. So what I want to add. For us, we add the axiom that says that not just that it's a pointed K category, but that it's a pointed K category, and so I'm going to add some axioms that say that when I say tower, I also mean that AK should be Kerubian, which is to say that's actually two conditions. It should be idempotent complete. And I mean idempotent in the sense of our paper with Davide. And it should be, a space is idempotent complete. That's not a problem. I mean, then you're this still. But I also actually want another condition that says that it should be additive. And additive is two conditions. Additive is semi-additive plus you can subtract. So, but anyway, additive means that it has direct sums and top morphisms, and minus one exists among the top morphisms. So you can subtract. So that's what additive means. These are just properties, by the way. It's a fun exercise it's like a really good classical exercise in a first course in category theory to convince yourself that it is not extra data on a category to have direct sums and a notion of addition. So that if you want to ignore me, go do that homework exercise. It like seems weird. You think that it's extra data because it is extra data to have a notion of addition. But if you have direct sums and addition, they sort of they play off each other in such a way that it's just a property to have these two things together. So it's just some properties. Okay. So what do I want to say about these? So this is what a tower is. And so now what we want to do, so as I said, towers are about targets for TQ of T's. And many years ago, Mike Hopkins asked the following question. So there's a sort of a request of is this backboard? No, there is no backboard. Okay. So many years ago, Hopkins asked the following. So about 10 years ago, maybe. Roughly 10 years ago. So I should tell you a little bit more about these. So if you have a tower, then in particular, it makes sense to look at the invertible elements in the tower, the invertible objects, the invertible morphisms between invertible objects. So you definitely get a collection of invertible objects. I'll write it as the multiplicative group of the tower. And this is the multiplicative group is just going to be a spectrum. And it's defined as I said, that the multiplicative group in degree n is the invertible objects and morphisms in A, in dimension n. And those are just spaces because, as I said, a category in which everything is invertible is the same as a space. And the delooping axiom here restricts to a good delooping on the spaces of invertibles. So you just get a spectrum. And this is the spectrum, this is the universe, this is the recipient of invertible theories valued in your category. If towers are the things that should be receiving TQFTs, this is where, like if you've decided on a world in which TQFTs take values, then GM of your choice is the world in which invertible TQFTs, in short-range entangled theories, take values. And there's a particularly interesting spectrum. There's a particularly interesting spectrum called IC cross. And it's a slightly surprising that it exists. So IC cross is characterized by the following property. It's the spectrum with the following weird property. And I'll tell you why it's weird. So to tell you an object in a category, it's enough for me to tell you all the maps into that object. I just test a category. So to tell you an object in a category, I should just tell you all the maps into it. So the maps into, oh, now I have a terrible problem that I used A for my tower, and I also use A for abelian group. And I like T for spect, oh, shoot, okay, whatever. Sorry, this is just gonna also be A. Those should not have been A's if I were prepping this correctly. That for any other spectrum, I'll just write it this way, that the maps into IC cross, so the homotopy theorists write brackets for maps in the homotopy category of something. So this means hom in the hom, it means the pi zero of hom in the category of spectra from something into IC cross. That's what square brackets mean in homotopy theory. And the characterizing property, it's characterized in the homotopy category of spectra anyway, is that this should be the same as maps of abelian groups from pi zero of your source into C cross. And what's weird is that there's doesn't seem like, this doesn't look like a formula that should be representable. And it's a slightly surprising fact that this is representable. It boils down to the fact that C cross is a divisible group. And that's what you need. So it would not be representable if C cross were not a divisible group. But it is, so this exists. And from the definition, you see that just from the definition, you find out, as it's sort of pointed out by maybe, I think it's sort of pointed out, well, I think originally by Hopkins, but in print by Fried and Hopkins. That IC cross is a thing that invertible TQFTs, at least if your tower is such that its invertibles are IC cross, then what it's telling you is that, like, then what that's telling you is that's telling you, that's like the same as telling you essentially, that invertible TQFTs are determined, are uniquely determined. Determined by their partition functions. That's the content of saying that I'm valued in IC cross. So another thing that that Hopkins was very much thinking about 10 years ago was he was thinking about the fact that when we do, like, the best type of physics has fermions in it. It sort of turns out wrong in some way that needs to be made precise at the time. At least, you know, we didn't have a sort of good way of saying this, but it felt wrong to work with TQFTs value just in vector spaces. It felt wrong to work with quantum field theories value just in vector spaces. If you really want to do quantum field theory, you should allow yourself fermions. And so Hopkins asked, so there's a question of Hopkins, which is what sort of motivated one of the motivations of our work. He didn't have the language of towers, but he had the idea of, I mean, he didn't have the name, but he had everything else. What Hopkins asked was, first of all, find a nice tower, a good tower. Find and justify your choice, a good tower. I don't know T, because I shouldn't have called it A, such that the sort of the one-dimensional piece of your tower was S, the super vector spaces over the complex numbers, and the multiplicative group of your tower is IC cross. And the question was, first of all, build such a tower and build it in a non-stupid way. Build, justify your choice. Convince me that it's the right one.
Is pi 1 of IC cross involving mod 2?
Yes. I should tell you a little bit about IC cross, actually. So that's a great question. Let me say that next, but I'll just write down what I said and convince me it's good. So as Kevin correctly recognizes, these conditions they're redundant a little bit, and they possibly conflict. So if I'm going to convince you this, I'd better convince you, for example, that in dimension one, this is not inconsistent. So let me do that. So let me remind you how IC cross looks. So from the characterizing property of IC cross, what you can do is now sort of, if you want to test a homotopy group of a tower in general, the way you test a homotopy group of a tower, it's not a tower, a spectrum. In general, to test a homotopy group of a spectrum, you can test that, so for any spectrum, pi k of your spectrum is the maps into your spectrum from the k-sphere. S was, again, a lousy choice, b. For B, is the maps into your spectrum from the sphere, just shifted in degree by k. So it's just a degree shift, sort of mapping in from the sphere. And so, in particular, if you're IC cross, then you can map in from something just by testing the homotopy group of that thing. And so, in particular, you find that pi k of IC cross is, well, it's, I mean, I can give the exact formula. It's the homotopy groups. It's pi minus k of the sphere spectrum Hom into C cross. The sphere spectrum is connective. It only has homotopy in non-negative and positive degrees. So these objects only have homotopy in negative degrees. And that's why I'm always using raised indices, because raised indices just go the opposite direction as lowered indices. So my spectra sort of always go down. That's why we called it deeper. So for a while we were calling this higher. But like in the sort of, if you go and hang out with like higher category, like with the sort of these brave new higher category world people, higher means E infinity ring spectra. And we're doing something else. We're going down rather than up into the infinity world. We're going down. So in particular, so for example, the first few go that pi 0 of IC cross is just C cross, and pi minus 1 of IC cross is a Z2, dual to the two cobordism classes, the two cobordism classes. So remember that the sphere spectrum, another term, the sphere spectrum is the same as the bordisms, stably framed bordisms. So when you think about maps out of a sphere spectrum, you're really thinking about that invariance of stably framed manifolds. So there's two stably framed manifolds in dimension one, because you can take, there's the empty manifold in dimension one, and you can take the circle with a non-bounding spin structure. That's the other class. The next one is pi minus 2 is another Z2. Pi minus 3 is a Z24. The sphere spectrum is universal for maps out of it. It's really easy to map out of the sphere spectrum. IC cross, correspondingly, is universal for maps into it. Like this tells you it's easy to map into the sphere spectrum. And because it's easy to map out of it, it must be complicated. Because it must be easy to map to complicated things. Or if it's easy to map into something, it must be complicated. Because you must be able to map into it from complicated things. And so that tells you in particular that all these homotopy groups have to be linked together in as complicated a way as it is possible for homotopy groups to be linked together. And indeed, you can work out what the K invariants, what the Posnikov data of the first few degrees are, and the Posnikov invariants are always as non-trivial as is possible for a stable invariance of B. So the Posnikov first order Posnikov invariants are, for instance, minus 1 to the square 2, and square 2 mod 2 are the first few sort of Posnikov invariants in degree 2. And all of these are strictly non-zero, and they're the only maps they could be. Mod 3, the first Posnikov, these two terms vanish, but there's a Posnikov invariant here, which is, again, like as non-trivial as it can be. I think it's mod 3, and then you do the sort of mod 3 Steenrod square, and then you do a sort of exponentiation. It's like really as non-trivial as possible. And if you look at SVEC, if you look at what does GM of supervector spaces looks like. Well, GM of supervector space is just a category, so it's only going to have two levels. But in the top degree, you again have a C cross, the supervector spaces over the complex numbers. And you also have a Z2, now thought of as the even line and the fermionic line. And these are again connected by a Posnikov invariant. They're again connected by minus 1 to the square 2. And this is the Kozel sign rule. This is like a way of saying the Kozel sign rule, is to say that this is the connecting number. So again, so at least we're compatible with this question of Hopkins. Hopkins furthermore speculated, but he didn't have a good argument for this at the time, but he guessed that probably T2 would be the category of superalgebras. And maybe because we're only doing topological field theory, I should have said like finite dimensional supervector spaces and fully dualizable superalgebras or something like that. Doesn't matter for the purposes of calculating invertibles. And his reason for that was he knew that if you looked at GM superalgebras, so this is just the boson and the fermion, is that Z2, that there's another Z2 living in the next dimension in superalgebras, now thought of as Clif 0 and Clif 1. As the two Clifford algebras over the complex numbers. And again, you can calculate that indeed this connecting map is square 2. That's another manifestation. It's a corollary of the Kozel sign rule. And then it's a sort of standard exercise that I think has been done in the literature at least half a dozen times that says that there's up to non-canonical isomorphism, exactly one spectrum with these three homotopy groups and these two K invariants. So a priori, if I just give you a list of homotopy groups and the first order Posnikov invariants, I have not told you the spectrum, but it's an exercise that actually that tells you the spectrum in this case. So that tells you that these two spectra, at least in this range of degrees, do match, not necessarily canonically, but they match. So, okay. So that was the question of Hopkins, and this is what we've answered. So our answer for this, and this is now what I have to tell you in the second, and I guess the last 25 minutes, is that we've done this. So what we've done is, so our answer to this question is, so our answer is that this tower T that Hopkins asked for should be the sort of algebraic closure, the Galois closure of the complex numbers in the category of towers. And so that's why my theorem is put up here. So our theorem is really about, so now I have to make a few comments and I have to tell you what I mean by this. So let me first tell you what I mean by this. So so what do I mean by, how do I mix, this is a tower, this is a ring, and surely this ring is algebraically closed. I think you know that. So what could I mean by this? What I mean is the following. I mean that, see, if you take the infinity category of towers, you can map that to the category of symmetric monoidal n categories just by taking a tower to its nth level. And for instance, let's take n to be 0 for what I'm talking about. A symmetric monoidal 0 category is called a commutative ring. Doesn't matter. But everything I'm saying works in general. And this functor has a left adjoint. Which does the following. See, if you have a symmetric monoidal n category, you can deloop it in a stupid way. You can just sort of put a turtle below it and make it stand on top of the turtle. And you put a turtle below that, and it stands on that turtle. And so you sort of do this like turtles all the way down delooping. And that's a tower in Scheinbauer's sense. It's not quite a tower in our sense, but it's only a tower not in our sense for the obvious, for the reasons that I needed to be additive in Caribbean. So then you Caribbe completed. So this adjoint is the turtle delooping and Caribbe completion. That's what the adjoint is very explicitly. And what turns out just from tracking through how turtle delooping and Caribbe completion work, it's not hard to convince yourself that this inclusion is actually fully faithful. So it's a fully faithful map. So in other words, symmetric monadal categories are, I think with Lucas we were figuring this out this morning, either a reflective subcategory or a co-reflective subcategory, and I don't remember which one it is, of the category of terms. Anyway, they're a full subcategory of the category of terms. So when I say I want C to be the Galois closure of C, what I really mean is take the ring C, make it into a tower in the sort of turtle way, and then look for its algebraic closure in the world of towers, or its Galois closure. So now I have to tell you a little bit more about Galois theory, because I don't know if y'all really remember your course in Galois theory. And even if you do, you probably learned from one of these 20th century books that doesn't actually teach Galois theory correctly. Or maybe it teaches like, I feel like we should either, I'm teaching Galois theory in the winter, and I like don't have a good book for this. Because the problem is that your choice is like, the books you can find on the market are sort of neither do it really well in a sort of modern way that's useful for modern science, and they also don't do like the beautiful old story that really justified Galois theory, like the work of Hilbert and his collaborators. And they sort of split the difference by just not doing very much. And I'm really frustrated about this. But on the other hand, like, I don't know what to do. I only have like 10 weeks for the course. So let me tell you a little bit more about Galois theory. So let me tell you, okay, so I've told you what a tower is. I haven't told you the rest of it. So let me tell you about Galois closure and a little bit about why condition two is there. And then I'll finish by telling you a little bit about the roots of unity. I sort of hinted at what a root of unity is because I told you what all the invertibles were, but I haven't told you what a root of unity is. So I do want to tell you about that a little bit. So let me tell you what Galois groups. So here's just a classical fact. And I'm not really sure who this fact is due to. It's probably not due to Galois. I think he didn't say it. I think he didn't know this, but you know, it might have been. It was certainly the type of thing that Grothendieck knew inside and out that encouraged Deligne to develop Tanakian duality. So it's sort of about the mid 20th century, and it'll obviously be, as soon as I write the language down, it'll be clearly of that. Yeah, but it's probably an early 20th century thing. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if this is the type of thing that Schur knew. So the fact is the following. Let's say take K a field. Then G a finite group. Then you can look at the following. You can ask for the functors, the symmetric monadal functors, symmetric monadal and K-linear functors from the category of representations of G back to the category of vector spaces. You can pick one. Of course, you have one. There's just the forgetful functor. But there might be others. And if you have any functor like this, well, any functor like this inside of the category of representations of G is a favorite representation called the regular representation. And the regular representation, like, it is a commutative ring in the category of representations. G acts on itself, and in particular, it acts on the functions on itself. So inside of here is a group, is a ring, the commutative ring of functions on G. And if you have a functor, then f of applied to this commutative ring will be some commutative algebra. just because it's a symmetric Monero functor. And also just from tracing it through, moreover, it will be a G, it'll be a G Galois extension. In the sense that it has still has a G action on it, because G acts twice on the regular representation. G acts on itself both by left multiplication and right multiplication. I'm using one of those actions to talk about rep to, it as rep G, but it has another action. So it's still a G, has a G action on it. And if you take the fixed points of the G action, you'll have to get just the ground field back. So it's a G Galois extension of K, except it might not be a field. But if you allow yourself to write down a notion of Galois extension without fields, then this is a G Galois extension.
Does it define a principal debugging?
Yes. So then the sort of statement is, you can characterize all of them that actually, oh gee, I'm actually giving the proof of this right now. No, that's fine. I mean, I didn't sort of prep exactly the way to say this. OG generates this category. So to tell you the whole functor, I just have to tell you where this goes. And if to tell you the functor as a symmetric monomial functor, I just have to tell you where it goes as an algebra. And so what I'm finding is that the functors are precisely the G Galois extensions of K. There's another name for those, as Kevin says. Those are the same as G principal bundles over spec K. So these are the same as G bundles on spec K. While a G bundle is just the same as a map to BG, and spec K is a B Galois. So this is the same as maps of groupoids from B of the absolute Galois group. BG. And this defines the absolute Galois group. Because to tell you a group, all I have to do is to tell you all of its maps to every other group. And here I just told you all of them. So another name for B Galois of K is the Etal homotopy type of K. Those are just the same thing, the Etal homotopy type of spec K. So this will be my definition. You cannot do these at the same time. So the nice thing with towers is that towers know all of your, like, even if I just start with this with the turtle delooping, then the turtle delooping of K is vec K, and then the turtle delooping of that is like algebras over K or something like that. So the tower can encompass all of these things at the same time. And so the definition is the following. So in general, we've defined the following. So in general, given X a pi finite space, finite space is just sort of the homotopy version of finite group. So given X a pi finite space, you can look at the maps of towers of the representations of X into your tower. So X a pi finite space and T a, and I don't know, what am I calling my, whatever, T a tower. You can look at the category, the maps of towers from the representations of X into your tower, back down to your tower. And I want the maps of T-linear towers. So I look at the T-linear maps from the representation category back to your thing. And this is some functor in X. So if you look at X mapping to this, this is some covariant functor. This is a map from the category of pi finite spaces to the category of spaces. And this functor might be representable. Might not be, but it might be representable. And if it's representable, it's a covariant functor. If you really kind of track through which things should be called representable and which things should be called co-representable, covariant functor should be called co-representable, and variant functor should be called representable. Contravariant. Okay. Anyway, if this is co-representable, well, it will almost never be co-representable. Sorry. It just won't be, because it'll, like, just like, actually, this was not co-representable. So I was only testing against finite groups. And Galois groups are almost never finite. But that's OK. Galois groups also aren't groups. Galois groups are actually pro-finite groups. They're just not naturally discrete groups. They naturally come with some pro-finite topology. So this didn't define the Galois group as a group. It defined the Galois group as a profinite group. And yes, you could forget the profinite topology if you wanted, but that was wrong anyway. So I shouldn't ask it to be co-representable. I should ask it to be co-pro-representable. If this is pro-co-representable, then it's co-representing object. Is called the Étale space or the Galois space. Of your tower. And the first lemma is I'm not going to get to the Kummer theory at all. That's okay. And one of our propositions, I don't know in general whether this fiber functor problem is good and positive characteristic. But I do know that if T contains the rational numbers, then the Étale space exists. Turns out it's totally formal. So to show a functor is representable, you just have to check, is it like, does it have good behavior under certain finite limits? And in the rational case, we can do it because we have good control over kind of finite path, sort of finite path integral methods. Okay, good. So the other fact that we use is the fact that now you can just see it formally. So just from formal nonsense, you see that if you only want to test pi 1 and pi 0 of your Étale space, you only have to go up to your one category because you're only testing its one groups. And so to test pi 0 of your space, so this condition is really about testing the homotopy type of your space. It's asking, is your space simply connected or not? That's what this condition is testing. And I'll say something's Galois closed. What does Galois closed mean? Galois closed means that the Étale space should be contractible. That's what Galois closed should mean. Okay, so what is there left to do? Okay, so I have one more thing I have to tell you about, which is this notion of the roots of unity. So if you have any spectrum at all, if A is a spectrum, and let's just be, I think for some reason I really would like to just be in co-connective spectra. I think I'm going to be bothered if I allow all spectra. Then I'll set the torsion in A. You know, if you have an abelian group, it makes sense to ask about the torsion elements, the finite order elements in your abelian group. And the torsion in A is going to be, by definition, it's the thing that finite groups map into. That's the definition of the torsion in your abelian group. So this is but it's not, the torsion in your group is not itself a finite group, but it's a union of finite groups. So it's an ind object in pi finite spectra. There's some problem if your spectrum can go off to infinity in the other direction, that ind objects are not quite the right thing for what I'm doing. And it's just defined by as the universal such thing, the universal ind object with a map to A. And by mu of t, I just mean the torsion in GM of t. Torsion is computed as follows. If you have, it took us a long time to understand this because we got it wrong for a while. So if you have if you look at pi k, what do I want to say? So Let me say it this way. So you know, so the sort of the obvious thing is if you have a sort of homotopy, then the torsion in the homotopy becomes homotopy in the torsion. So the what I want to say is that the torsion in the homotopy groups, it receives two things. So first of all, the torsion in degree k gets in. That's the obvious part. And then we messed this up for a while, but we got it right. So another thing that this can contribute here is free stuff in one dimension higher. So the sort of z's in pi k minus 1, k plus 1. So for instance, if you look at if you have a z, yes, so the so z torsion for me is q mod z with a degree shift, just as a side. And so torsion free really means rational vector space, which is a much better thing. See, z really has torsion if you're in Spector. It like makes life better. Torsion free means q vector space. So knowing the torsion in your thing tells you that you don't know your thing exactly, but you know it up to a q vector space. And indeed, like the roots of unity inside of the complex numbers is not the same, but it's the same up to some q vector space. So that's OK. So what do I want to tell you? So Kevin, did you have a question you wanted to ask? Do you want me to just stop so you can ask questions? That's fine. OK. So now I just have to tell you, so suppose that you've gotten so far as of building, like let's suppose you can already do Galois theory in dimension zero. You already know how to build an algebraically closed field, like the complex numbers. And now you want to kind of go up from there. You want to build, so if you already know how to build an algebraically closed field, like the complex numbers, then this condition, where did I put it? This condition here tells you that actually vec k, one dimension up, already has like, you've already killed pi 1 if k is algebraically closed. So now I just have to go up in higher dimensions. And what you know is that if you want to kill higher homology and you've already killed pi 1, you can do this. Sorry, if you want to kill higher homotopy and you've already killed pi 1, it suffices to kill homology. And that's really the last step of it. So what is killing homology doing? Homology is all about abelian extensions. Homology is like the universal abelianization of your space. So homology is about abelian extensions in Galois theory. And Kummer theory is about abelian extensions. So Kummer theory tells you how to do some abelian extensions. And I can tell it to you really easily. Let's suppose that K contains, suppose you just have a field. Let's just do an ordinary field. And suppose that K contains all the pth roots of unity. For some, maybe whatever, lth roots of unity for some number L. And suppose that A is an abelian group, so K a field. And suppose that A is an abelian group. And suppose that A is an abelian group of exponent L. Meaning that the lth power of any element in your group is trivial. So then what you can do is the following. You can look at Hom from A into K cross. These are the one-dimensional representations. And you can look at all representations. And this condition is exactly the thing you need so that all representations are built out of one-dimensional representations. So you can Kurubi complete this. You know, Kurubi and direct sum complete it. And that's being an isomorphous. But on the other hand, I told you that you understand arbitrary Galois extensions as soon as you understand maps out of the representation category. But you understand reps out of it, but if the representation category is generated by one-dimensionals, then you understand maps out of it just by understanding what to do with invertibles. And so what you find is you find that this condition, this being an isomorphism, so you might say A has a good Fourier transform if this is an isomorphism. has good Fourier transform. That's that condition. It's just a condition. I mean, it's like built, unpacks to something about existence of certain roots of unity. And if A has good Fourier transform, then you get the statement of Coomer, which says that in this case, then A Galois extensions of K are the same as maps from this dual group into just back to Vec. Well, Vec also, what does Vec have? Vec, the invertible, so this is a purely invertible thing. So I only have to map into the invertibles in Vec. And the invertibles in Vec is just a K cross in degree 1. So in other words, this is, HK cross. So in other words, this is the same as, this is just another way of writing this, is it's the first homology of the dual group, or the first stable homology of the dual group with coefficients in K cross. Doesn't matter for this degree. And so this is what Coomer theory is about. And then Coomer goes and boils down what this homology group, like what this group homology looks like in terms of more explicit things. If you have enough Lth roots, you can start to really attack this. And that's what we do to go higher and higher. So in particular, to build a Galois extension, we just do iterated Coomer extensions. And what we prove is that, so the content sort of main thing we do is to show that if I'm so now what do? So what you literally do is so that means that somehow you, and anyway, you find out that you have no abelian extensions exactly when you're in this good condition, because this is the thing that just sort of is like, if you're trying to map in from any other group, like. So this condition one tells is the statement that you have no abelian extensions at all. And so that's basically, I guess that's how the theorem goes. So let me just end very explicitly by saying kind of how it goes in general. So I've sort of finished the theorem. Kevin can leave. And I'll just sort of end briefly by saying kind of how the last step in the construction goes, that what we actually do is the following. So to build the algebraic closure of a field, what we do is we say, well, suppose you've built Tn in kind of symmetric monodal n categories, and it's sort of algebraically closed here. Or at least slightly weaker than that is that pi less than n of t vanishes. So that's slightly weaker than being algebraically closed, but it's about this, it's roughly the same. So suppose you've gotten at sort of, you've sort of killed your Eitzel type up to dimension n. Then what you do is you look you can take sort of the turtle delooping of Tn, the sort of towerification of Tn. You can compare that to what you want. Oh, I'm using some fact that, of course, I hope everybody knows, which is that in any field, there's always a canonical map to Q, not canonical. Any field, the roots of unity do map injectively into Q mod Z. And being a having a map from your roots of unity into Q mod Z that's an injection is the same as your ring having no non-trivial idempotence. So like your Eitzel space being connected. So what you can do in general is you sort of pick a map into Q mod Z. Picking a map from your field into Q mod Z gives you a map into I Q mod Z at the level of spectra, because unique up to non-unique isomorphism. So you have this map. You can look at the deficit. You can look at the co-kernel, the deficit. So the deficit is like the missing roots of unity. It's here's the roots of unity you want. Here's the roots of unity you have. You look at the deficit. You've arranged it so that this is an isomorphism in degrees above n. This is an iso in degrees above minus n. And so you look at the deficit in the next degree where it could be. And I might be off by a plus or minus 1, but you look at something like pi minus n, maybe with a plus or minus 1 that I can't remember. The first place where it could be non-zero, just from the long exact sequence and homotopy, of the deficit. And you look at sort of the Eilenberg-MacLane space for this group. So you look at like H of this group, sort of just as a single degree. And the point is that this guy has good Fourier transform. And so you extend by it. And then you just keep doing that dimension by dimension. And so this is how you build an algebraically closed Taylor. So I definitely, I'll stop. Okay, thank you for your attention. You can ask me like basic questions in Galois theory if you want. Like, it's okay.
Sorry, just all. Okay, when we take the closure of C in our definition, like, is there are explicit things you can see over the next several levels.
Yeah, this is the question I was hoping to get. So yes, we exactly know what you get. So let me say a little bit more about what's sort of just to sort of orient yourself first of all. So what I'm really doing here by making this choice where I'll just kill them all at like one level at a time, what I'm literally doing is I'm literally building a Posnikov tower for my Atal space. So that's this construction. This is building a Posnikov tower. For the Atal space of the complex numbers, or whatever your ground field is. It'd be Q, I don't know. R. Q. Doesn't matter. Any characteristic zero field I could start with. The very zeroth level just bumps Q up to the Q bar, or R up to C, or whatever, and then the next level bumps C up, well, the next level bumps it up to supervector spaces, and so on. And so what you can do, by the Haurevitz theorem, this is basically the homology in that dimension. And I want the homotopy. That's the real question you're asking. That is, what is the homotopy? I mean, what you're asking is you're asking me what's the homotopy groups of this. And I can compute the homology groups of it. But Haurevitz tells me that those are the same, that if I can kind of compute the lowest homology of each level, that is the homotopy. And so so that's how we do the computation. Now I can just tell you the answer. So what you find is, I'll start listing some answer for you. So what you find, let me do the real numbers because it's a little bit doesn't matter. Yeah, the real numbers are the prettiest answer. So the answer goes as follows. When you just start computing, what you find is you see that the homotopy groups of the real numbers or go as follows. You see a Z2, so that's the Galois group. That's like the Galois group of C over R. R does have, by the way, notice that R has both square roots of 1. And so the degree 2 extension C over R is a Kummer extension. So this Z2 is sort of dual to the Z2, which is 1 and I kind of mod real numbers. It's that Z2. And then the next thing you see is a Z2 But you know, you could also think of this as like complex conjugation. This C2 is like minus one of the fermion number. It's dual to C1 and C0. Now the next step was just super vector spaces. You can compute that there's nothing to do in the next step. Because super algebra, see, super vector spaces already determined super algebra. So you didn't have to put in Clif 1 by hand. It was already there. And the next step that you have to put in is a Z24. Is that right? It's much bigger than that. So what you actually get is the following in the next dimension. So what you actually get is you get a Z24, and then so let me tell you the dual group. Let me tell you these are all sort of dual abelian groups because I'm somewhere in the Kummer construction. I was really like taking, like this wasn't really the homology. This was really the cohomology. It was sort of the dual because of this dualing, sort of one of those duals in there. So let me just tell you sort of the other side. Let me tell you the duals to the homotopy groups. The next group you find is you find in dimension three, you find on the dual side, you find a Z24 extension of what's called the super quantum Witt group. And you don't really find that because this is a sort of thing about modular tensor categories. You don't really find the super quantum Witt group because this has non-torsion. So you find the torsion in it, and then you find sort of the thing that's one dimension lower. So I didn't tell, so any non-torsion becomes a Q mod Z in the next dimension. So in the next dimension, you have, so this is in dimension three, here's 2, 1, 0. In dimension four, you have like the super quantum Witt group, kind of tensored with Q mod Z. I'm just telling you the answer because we've done it. So the super quantum Witt group itself, so this thing is non-canonically isomorphic to Z mod 2 to the infinity times Z to the plus infinity times Z mod 4 to the plus infinity. And this thing is non-canonically a Z to the infinity. So there's sort of infinitely much stuff in this range of degrees. I should have laid this out better. In higher degrees, actually, there's a what I knew I wouldn't have time to do. We have calculated it completely. In higher degrees, what happens is the following. In general, what we can do is we can take the Atal space of R, and we can build a map. See if I can get this right. So the map from the Atal space of R to the multiplicative group, you take the sphere, I can even do this with the complex numbers, the rational numbers. The only place where that didn't, where it mattered whether I was working over Q or R was in this bottom degree. Because then, so there's a map from the Atal space of Q to the profinite, you take the profinite completion of the sphere, and you take the multiplicative group of the profinite completion of the sphere. It's a loops map, so B of that. So there's a group map like that. And this is a map you're familiar with. This is called the cyclotomic character. So if you take the cyclot, so what's going on is if you take any field at all, if it were algebraically closed, then its roots of unity would be a Q mod Z. And the Galois group of the algebraic closure must act on the roots of unity. So what I just told you was that every Galois group acts on Q mod Z. But the group, the automorphism group of Q mod Z is Z hat is the sort of multiplicative group of Z hat. It's the invertible profinite integers. So this is sort of a spectrum version of the invertible profinite of the cyclotomic character. So this is the cyclotomic character. And the what we can do is build from this. So you can ask, like, how much does this fail to be an isomorphism? I'm actually telling you sort of a long exact sequencing. So you can now, the homotopy groups of this are almost the homotopy groups of spheres, except for in bottom dimension. So this looks like the homotopy groups of spheres. This is the thing we want, the homotopy groups of the Eital space. And so if I could tell you about the homotopy groups of the fiber, then I'd tell you that this guy is, provided you know about the homotopy groups of spheres, which you don't, but let's pretend that you do, because maybe, I don't know, maybe Adams has already computed those. And so you can look at the fiber, and what we can do is we can build a map from the fiber to a certain L spectrum. I'm not going to tell you what it is. It's a certain kind of finite L theory. We call it lowercase L. Doesn't matter what it is. What it is in terms of quantum field theory, this was all about topological quantum field theory. This map is basically a sort of abelian Chern-Simons theory, is what's going on in this map. It would take me another couple talks to tell you why this is what this is, but what this map ends up being is it's basically abelian Chern-Simons theory for it's like finite abelian groups, finite abelian Chern-Simons theory. Is who this map is. And what we can show is that this map is an isomorphism except in degree 4. So you already saw something about, if you know about the quantum Witt group, you know that some of the modular tensor categories are just abelian Chern-Simons theories. They're just like finite group abelian Chern-Simons theories. They're just finite groups with a braiding on them. And not all of them are, but that's what this map is doing. Is it's like the map that sort of, on the dual side that includes the pointed, the group-like modular tensor categories among all the modular tensor categories. And that's the content of this map. And then the theorem well, of course, there's something in dimension 0 which has to do with the fact that the Galois group of the rational numbers is crap. But other than in dimension 0 and dimension 4, that, so the theorem is except so that the, if you look at this map here from F to the L theory to this finite L theory, it's finite, so I use a lowercase letter, is an iso in dimensions I think bigger than roughly 6, bigger than 5, like at least 6. At least maybe even at least 5. I forget where the cutoff is, but the only failure to be an isomorphism, the only failures are in dimension 0. There's the fact that if I was really looking at the rational numbers, then this looks like the algebraic group of Q, and this looks like the this looks like the Galois group of Q, and this looks like the abelianization of the Galois group of Q. So the Kronecker-Weber theorem tells you that for Q itself, the cyclotomic character is the map direct onto the abelianization. So in dimension 0, there's a deficit of the kind of the derived subgroup of the usual absolute Galois group of the rational numbers. Okay, I'm never going to be able to say something interesting about actual number theory, so I won't say anything interesting about that either. That's the deficit there. And in dimension 4 and 5, the deficit is the sort of true, the purely quantum, the total, the very quantum part, the truly quantum part. Of the kind of quantum Witt group of modular tensor categories. And it's spread across two dimensions because of the sort of profinite and infinite, the sort of torsion stuff. That's just what spreads it out, because you had some, because like before taking torsion, it was all in one degree, but then that had some like Z2s and some Z's, and then taking torsion spreads it into 2 degrees. And otherwise, it's just, otherwise that's the complete list. So, so let me just, I mean, I think people want to go, so I won't, I'm just keeping you here. If you compared this to what was motivating us is if you look at BGM of this, the regular sphere, that has a map from B of the piecewise linear group called the J homomorphism, which is the piecewise linear group can rotate spheres around. And it has some other fiber. I should have called this a lowercase fiber. But the red fiber has a canonical map to a different L theory, a much more classical L theory. And this is really about, this was really about finite abelian Chern-Simons theory. This is really about a Chern-Simons theory for tori. This is like about true Chern-Simons theory. It's about Chern-Simons theory for tori. That's what's going on in this map. And this guy is known to be an isomorphism, except in, well, maybe some stupid low degrees, but also it actually works out in the bottom degree for the wave setup, and it fails to be an isomorphism in dimension 4. And in dimension 4, the only deficit is a single Z2 called the Kirby-Siebenmann invariant. And so somehow what I'm telling you is I'm telling you this algebraic thing of cyclotomic characters is like a sort of finite version of the J homomorphism. And the quantum weight group is like a sort of version of the Kirby-Siebenmann invariant. I gave you the answer. Any other questions? No. Y'all should leave. Go away.